scientist. This is the FOSC briefing by the steering committee. Happens once a week. This is, I think, week three, maybe week four. I'm not sure anymore. I'm Sue Apley, and this is KCHU Valdez Cordova, broadcasting live from on remote site. There should be quite a bit of information coming forward this morning since we last met here. Both bioremediation projects and Corexit projects have been started, and I'm sure we'll be hearing reports of those as they continue, telling us a little bit more about them. Last time we had a report by NOAA on washing treatments. Preliminary reports at results at that time said most oil was recovered from the surface in 1.5 hours rather than the normal 4. So perhaps we'll have a little bit more on that. This is a time when we have fairly formal reports from all the entities, from Exxon, from the Department of Environmental Conservation, EPA, NOAA, CDFU, the Interagency Shoreline Cleanup Committee. There's quite a few people that come forward and make their presentations. Admiral Robbins is not sitting at the table yet. There is someone else in his place, his assistant. I understand the Admiral is running a little bit late due to weather. He's out with the Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. Admiral Yost came to visit and see what things were going on in the cleanup operations. The room is starting to get filled up. Steve Probant, the state on-scene coordinator, has just come in. And they're all taking their places up to the front, handing out the weekly reports. John Bauer is in charge of shoreline operations for the Department of Environmental Conservation. He's taking a seat up at the front table. I'm hearing more and more people say that this makes very good radio listening. Fast, quick way to find out all sorts of things that are going on in this cleanup operation. And it really is easier to sit at home and listen on the radio than it is to come in here. We have about 70 people a night crammed into this room. There's only 30 chairs or so. So people get stacked up around the edges. As I'm working the sound system, I have people keep track of who's talking into which mic, so I keep moving people out from in front of me. But it's just one of the things with radio, you know. I guess I could tell you the latest news I heard. DEC has issued permits on the 3 incinerators, 2 barge incinerators, and 1 more, which has turned out to be the rotary kiln proposed for use by All American. We're going to start. Here we go.
Gentlemen, I'm Tony Alejandro, representing Admiral Robbins. The Admiral was delayed. He is probably at this time on the return leg from Kodiak. He was delayed approximately an hour in departing Kodiak after he accompanied the Commandant on the visit over there to that area. There is a good chance that the Admiral may be coming in mid-meeting if he gets here on his revised schedule. Accompanying Admiral Robbins was Rear Admiral Dave Cingolini, who is the 17th District Commander. He will be replacing Admiral Robbins for a couple of weeks when Admiral Robbins takes some much-needed leave. Admiral Robbins will be departing on the 10th after he testifies in Cordova before the Marine Fisheries Committee. He will be returning approximately the 27th of this month. One issue that he asked me to make an announcement on is the fact that the state has issued permits for the incineration vessels, and we will probably be operating two incinerator vessels to help dispose of some of the oiled refuse. And I'm sure that ADEC and Exxon can elaborate on that further in their presentations. as a result of those permits and those incinerators coming online, I understand that there will probably not be a need for the incinerators on Dayville Road. That's the only thing I had to announce, so I'll just turn it over to Exxon now.
Okay, as usual, let us begin with safety. And if you're brand new in our meeting, you know that the only entrance out of the room is back through the door you came through. There's always some confusion about the other two doors, but they are not a way, an exit from the room or the building. So in case we have a problem, you exit through this, preferably down the stairs and out of the building. But if that way happens to be blocked with some sort of emergency, proceed on down the stairs and on down the halls and turn left at the end. And that'll be a safe route for you to leave this building in case we have an emergency, which we certainly don't expect. We had a good week as far as accidents are concerned. We did have 19 total recordable accidents this week. Number of programs that we've continued. I mentioned last week our training program to begin the bioremediation. That's continued, and we've also had some programs in effect for the chemical treatments that's now taking place on Smith Island. So those have been additional trainings over our past week. Otherwise, we just continue to emphasize to our people the dangers that they're facing. As we look at the accidents, we find that backs and leg injuries are our biggest culprits, and that doesn't surprise us with the kind of jobs that we're doing here. So we're real pleased with the kind of accident record that we're seeing to date. Looking on the page of our statistics, we do show for this week that we have 1,420 vessels deployed, 36 skimmers, 82 aircraft, and still have 278,000 feet of boom deployed. This past week, we treated 146.4 miles, and it brings our cumulative total of miles treated both in Prince William Sound and the Gulf of Alaska to 847.3 miles. So we're real pleased with the progress that's happening there. We did have a somewhat upward movement in cleaning vessels and landing craft. They're up from 57 last week to 61. That shows the addition of the biological treatment vessels that we have out there. So we now have a total of 87 treatment vessels working and 76 berthing vessels. We added another four small berthing vessels down in the Gulf of Alaska just this last week. Did recover another 437 barrels of oil last week. We are actually increasing our cleaning capacity for boom, but the past week we cleaned 44,050 feet of boom. So we feel pleased about that, and we still have over 11,000 people working on the project with 11,025 in this week's count. As we've been doing in the past few weeks, we have brought our operations coordinators in to give you a briefing as to what they're doing in their various areas, and I'll now turn the program over to Scott Nauman and Bill Stillings, who handle the Prince William Sound cleanup. Scott Nauman is first.
I'm Scott Nauman. I'll reintroduce myself. I've been out for a couple of weeks, but I'm back coordinator for Task Forces 3, 4, and 5. In the package we handed out, we've got some tables and maps that refer to the various task forces, but what I'd like to do is work from the map up front and just give you an update on what's happened last week. Had quite a bit of activity with the task forces from a movement relocation standpoint. Let me start with Task Force 3, which had been located in Herring Bay. We have now relocated Task Force 3 to Perry Island. The task force is located in East Twin Bay, right in here. Got a few areas to work on Perry. As you know, we're returning to Perry. We're concentrating on Perry Island segments 7 and 8. That's where the bulk of our effort lies. The remainder of the island has a few spots, but most of our efforts will be right in this location. Might point out, one thing that we've done is we're using some special booming procedures, utilizing beyond our normal double booming techniques, triple and in some cases four sets of booms to ensure the reduction minimization of sheening in the Perry Island area. I was out there today, did two overflights, and that looks to be very effective in the area where we're working. Moving down to Task Force 4, We remain in the Eleanor Island area where Task Force 4 has been for a number of months now. Two areas of emphasis that we've had, one is inside Northwest Bay where the task force is anchored. The other is on the eastern coast of Eleanor Island, which I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, has some very heavily oiled areas, segment 109 down here in particular. Our strategy here has been to concentrate on the eastern coast the last few weeks as weather permits and as a fallback, utilizing the interior of Northwest Bay as a weather option. Good news today is that we have completed our work within Northwest Bay, the final four segments we have demobilized from today. So we've made progress. Northwest Bay continues to be an area where the going is slow, but as evidenced by the fact that we've finished inside the bay, it's steady, so we're making progress. Emphasis is going to continue to be on the outside and again on the eastern coast, and we foresee staying in that location for some time. One other move that relates to the task forces that I have, Task Force 5 has been located down in Lower Herring Bay. And you recall that the berthing vessels were the DB-100 Derrick Barge and the 312-2. Sunday and into Monday, we've relocated the task force and changed the berthing vessel assignment. And we moved the USS Ogden from Task Force 2 on Sunday, came around, stopped at Herring Bay. We loaded personnel and equipment onto the Ogden from the two berthing vessels I mentioned. And we've moved Task Force 5 to Smith Island. The Ogden is anchored just north of Smith here. We set up yesterday early, we set up the Ogden. The move went very well, both from the standpoint of personnel and equipment. We were able to deploy and actually do work on Smith yesterday, the same day that the vessel arrived, so it was a good move. We've also brought in the Resurrection Bay, which is another berthing vessel, 400-plus beds, to the Smith Island area. It should be ready for occupancy within a couple of days. A couple of things I'd like to note about Smith and the activities we have going there. One is on the eastern coast, and in your, again, in your package there's a map, but the very eastern tip of Smith is a pinniped area. We have a target to be off of that particular segment by the 10th. Again, stop by there today. The weather has been kind to us. We've been able, as I mentioned, to work the last 2 days, made very good progress. And as of this afternoon, we felt that our work in the pinniped area was almost complete. So we've done what we set out to do there. And other area I'll mention is the application in a field test of the Corexit 9580, which is occurring here on the north coast of Smith. Again, we set up yesterday. We initiated on a very limited basis the field test. Stopping by today, basically what we're doing, we have a fairly limited area that we're looking at. We're attempting to optimize our application technique. Yesterday we were utilizing backpacks. Today we moved to a system where we're running a main off of a landing craft to a manifold and then using hoses to the wands that we use in other areas. That appears to be a much more effective technique. Everyone involved today seemed a lot more optimistic about our ability to apply the chemical, and as I left there today, they were making good progress in the field tests. So that's underway, and we'll continue on Smith Island, and we'll be looking at those results. That's really all I had to say on Task Forces 3, 4, and 5. Either now or later I can answer questions, but I'll turn it over to Bill Stillings, who is the coordinator for Task Forces 1, 2, and 6.
Thank you, Scott. Again, I'm Bill Stillings. Last week I was coordinating 3, 4, and 5. Just to confuse you, we switched. I have 1, 2, and 6 at this point. Task Force 1 has continued in the southern sector. They were doing a lot of handwork in the southern Ellington area. And just late in the week, and into yesterday, today, they've moved back in on LA 15 on the northeast side, which is a heavily oiled area in this area, and begun working there. The work in the area over in here has gone very well. Progress has been good in there, and we are looking to move back into the Sleepy Bay area in the near future. Task Force 2 last week, we had said was going to move from Upper and Lower Passage. In fact, it did happen. They've moved down into Snug Harbor, and they're in on the C-411 barge, the berthing barge that came out of the Herring Bay area. We now have the C-411 tucked back in here in Snug Harbor, and the Corinthian has deployed up into Marsha Bay and is supplying berthing for the crews that are working on the islands in the front of Marsha Bay and the Marsha Bay area. So actually we have Task Force 2 split at this time. Bulk of the group is working in the heavily oiled cove here, and then the other task, part of the task force working up on the islands. Task Force 6 continues up on Crafton Island in the Isham area, moving along in this area. We have given them the responsibility for the few sections of work that remain to be done in the Herring Bay area after Task Force 3 moved out. We have some sections, two or three up in this area, section 5000 that remains down in the lower section, and then a couple small islands that were not signed off before the task force moved out. Task Force 6 will be responsible for those areas, and we'll pick them up. The other thing we have done is the bioremediation team that was working out of Task Force 1 on Green Island, because of the close proximity to Task Force 2 now, we have assigned operational control to Task Force 2 for the bioremediation team. They will get their support and logistical support and supplies out of the Task Force 2 area. They have been making slow progress, I would say, as they have worked through some of the problems with the application of the very viscous material in the fertilizer base. We've brought in some new sprayers in the last day or two. We tested basically an industrial airless paint sprayer that seems to work very well. We have purchased a number more of those units and have airlifted them in, and I believe we're working today, although I was not able to check late this afternoon. We feel that these positive displacement paint sprayers will work very well, as was demonstrated by the one we did bring in earlier in the week. Should increase our productivity and get us up to our target rate on a daily basis. Any questions I can answer? All right. Ken, can you cover the Gulf of Alaska?
Good day. I'm Ken Lewis, and I look after the Gulf of Alaska, and I'd like to review these activities with you. This includes operations at Seward, Homer, and Kodiak, and supply bases at Cordova and Whittier. In the Gulf, there were 732 miles to be treated. We have now treated 620 miles, which leaves 112 miles to go. Manpower on the shoreline is 880. Compared with the June plan of 812. The total manpower, which includes all of the indirects in the Gulf, is 1,710. We have 508 vessels and 46 aircraft out there. Dealing with each of the areas in turn, in Seward there were 19 miles to be treated. We have now treated 15 of the 19 miles, which leaves 4 miles to be treated. The current operations in the Seward area were working in 5 locations, and these are indicated on the Seward map, and the 5 locations are marked in hot pink. We have hot water washing at Morning and Wildcat Coves with lander units, And this process is going extremely well, and we're very pleased. We also have surface cleaning at Wildcat Cove. We now have four log burning sites, which were approved by ADEC for the Seward area. Unfortunately, we're not burning logs because we now cannot get a consensus within the MAC committee at Seward, which is very disappointing. We plan on starting bioremediation in three areas in the Seward area no later than April the 12th. Turning to Homer, there were 43 miles to be treated. We've now treated 36, which leaves 7 miles to go. We have current operations at 6 locations marked on the map in hot pink. Hot water washing at Tasina and Windy Bays and surface cleaning at Chugach Bay. We are currently on Barron Islands waiting on weather, and the next step there, as soon as we have a weather window, is to carry out the bioremediation on the 10 area. As I explained last week, we'll be leaving the Barron Islands no later than the 14th because we think it's an unacceptable risk. We are log burning in Homer, which is good, and that's making great progress at Tasina and Chugach Bays. Moving to Seward, there were 670 miles in the Seward area to be treated. We've now treated 574 of those miles, which leaves 96 miles. There were 670 miles to be treated. We've treated 574, and 96 miles are remaining. We have current operations there in 27 locations, both on the Alaska Peninsula and the east and west coasts of Kodiak Island. Dealing with the Alaska Peninsula, we currently have four task forces on that side, which we will reduce to three, as we feel it's a more secure and safe operation in an area that we do feel exposed on. In summary, on the peninsula, we're currently working at 38 locations. Last week, we treated 118 miles, which is a really good week. We made a lot of progress and signed off of by the U.S. Coast Guard on a cumulative basis to date. As of this morning, we had 149 miles, which is a terrific effort by the Coast Guard, and most of that is in the Kodiak area. We are preparing some operating and emergency response alternative plans for severe storm conditions during August and September. And this is quite important with our fleet out there, especially on the Alaskan Peninsula, the Barron Islands, and the west coast of Kodiak Island. Our current work plan, which is working very well, allows completion of all the work that we have identified no later than September 15th. This allows almost 15 days to rework or take on new areas that are either subject to be re-oiling or we haven't identified at this point in time. There are a lot of rumors running around the Gulf, and the purpose of this review is to provide you with factual information, not rumors. But when I hear a rumor about me personally, it concerns me. So I'd like to clarify clearly the latest rumor about me, and that is, I am not a close relative of Crocodile Mick Dundee. If you have any questions, I'd be delighted to handle them.
We squashed that rumor months ago.
Crocodile, yes.
Thank you.
You'll turn forward to page 15 in our report. We have our waste management report, and I'll ask Rob to cover that for us. Rob Dragnich.
Good evening. I am Rob Dragnich out of our waste management group. The first of the two handouts dealing with waste disposal you can see is the curve that basically allows you to see the progress that we're making with disposal. Primary message here, I think, is that the disposal is continuing to keep pace with the generation rate. The difference between the disposal and the generation is largely represented by the storage that we have out at the Dayville Road storage site, often referred to as Mount Dayville, and the storage that's also in our transportation system, just the containers of waste that are moving from the beach to here. As Tony mentioned earlier, we do have permits for the two barge mount incinerators. When those are operational, we'd expect to start eating into this difference and see no problem in completing the oily waste disposal by the end of the season. Turning to the second page of the waste disposal, you can see at the top a recap of the disposal quantities to date. I think the bottom line there is that we've disposed of almost 16,000 tons of oily solid waste as of this morning. Some of the highlights in the sanitary wastewater area, we submitted a pretreatment plan for treating the oily sewage, received endorsement of the concept from ADEC, and currently pursuing the details and actually building the systems. What we're planning to do is to take some, which are referred to as lash barges, you might think of them as tanks, beach them at a convenient place, put some aeration in them so that we can essentially process them, use that as a pretreatment device where we can skim the oil from it. Once we get to that point, we think we can skim the oil and have a clean enough product for it then to go to the Valdez sewage treatment plant or the aerated treatment lagoon. I mentioned the equipment is being installed now, and we expect to have the aeration equipment operational in about 2 to 3 days. Under the oily solid waste, the incinerator permits for both the Sealy and Advanced Environmental Technology barges were issued yesterday. In order to do that, Sealy and Advanced Environmental Technology had to waive their 5-day permit review under the state's Coastal Zone Management Review. The AET barge is planning to leave this afternoon or this evening for Vicota Bay on the northwest side of Kodiak Island. We expect it to arrive in about 2 days and start up 1 or 2 days after that, probably the 11th or 12th, possibly the 13th we'd be looking at for a startup date on that. The Sealy incinerator barge is on location in Herring Bay now. It began curing the final refractory on that this morning. We've requested ADEC's approval to start up without some of the non-critical instrumentation. The issue there is that the final permit that came out this weekend included some instrumentation that we'd refer to as non-critical process instrumentation that wasn't included in the draft permit or the original design for the unit. We're pursuing that as quickly as we can. We expect that'll be probably 2, maybe 3 or 4 days until we can actually get the instrumentation here and installed. If approval is granted to start up without that, we'd expect to start burning waste in it tomorrow. One other note that the Dayville Road incinerators were shut down today. In terms of the oily liquid waste, we're preparing plans to pre-treat the boat and gear cleaning wastewaters for oil removal. As you may recall, these are waters that contain detergents and cannot be disposed through the Alyeska ballast water treatment plant. So we'll do some pretreatment of those and then dispose of them probably through the Valdez sewage treatment plant. Essentially, if we can remove the oil content from that, the detergents in it would not be a problem for the sewage treatment plant. There's a pilot plant currently being set up now to allow us to establish to what water quality we can actually get to. We're developing procedures to handle waste drums. That has not been a big problem to date. With the Crexit and the bioremediation use, we're looking at generating probably a 2,500 to 3,500 drums, and so that, although not a big problem, is one that needs to be worked on. And lastly, we're developing a procedure to accept and identify and dispose of what we refer to as maybe some of our unknown liquid waste. We've received a little bit of that. As we move into demobilization, we expect to see more waste coming in from sources that fishing boats perhaps that have a drum that might be mixed liquids on it. We'll be having to make sure we handle that and dispose of it properly. Some of that could be hazardous waste if it's been mixed improperly. We want to make sure that we do that in accordance with all the necessary requirements. And the last item is we're assessing the possibility and potential locations for relocating the Unimar dry dock. Wanting to be able to keep that unit in operation as late as we can this year, may want to move it to a more protected cove than where it is on a naked island. And so we're looking at the different locations there to see if there are some that are more suitable.
We have one other report. Chipper Logie would like to make some comments on set-aside acreage.
A quick word. I'm happy to say that with the help of ADEC and the Coast Guard, we were able to work out an arrangement to retain the remaining set-aside locations. This will basically be for a 5 to 10 year period of study, scientific study. It's understood that all the parties are, you know, available to use the site. NOAA will be conducting coordinating the studies. None of the parties are obligating themselves to do any specific studies on the sites. The Coast Guard will be taking on the final responsibility for cleaning up the sites. Exxon has agreed to advance the Coast Guard a fixed sum of money, which will be available for the cleanup, if any, should be required at the end of the period. I think Exxon will be relieved of any obligation for the cleaning. So it was a agreement which all parties found to be acceptable, and we're glad to see that the set-asides will be available for future study.
Great. Yeah. Okay, that concludes our report tonight, Tony.
Thank you.
ADEC. Steve Provance.
Yeah, this is Steve Provance with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. I'll give you a little more information about our air permits and probably give you more information you ever wanted to know about them. But they are for they do allow for a 3-week period for burn-in, after which they have to be source tested. That we anticipate that it will take about 2 weeks for the source test results to come back, so they have an additional 2 weeks to operate. If the source test results are positive, then they can continue to operate. If they're not, if they're negative, then we'll have to work out the solutions to the problems that caused them to not pass the source test. Also, I wanted to say something about the fact that we are we had a crew out yesterday that was observing the bioremediation application on Green Island, and they noticed some unusual-looking material being dispersed into the water. So we met with EPA and discussed it, and are working out. Also EPA then, I guess, is getting with Exxon, but working out a procedure for our application of it, and we are going to be monitoring that application just to see how it goes. Regarding the set-asides, I'm not aware that we were quite to the same state that that Chipper mentioned. I think that there are some permits that are required that have to be issued by the state before those can be those parcels can actually be set aside, and so we still need to work through that. But I don't think that there should be any problem doing that. And then John Bauer is going to give a report on our aerial surveillance activities.
John Bauer with ADEC. ADEC has two aerial recon crews operating in Prince William Sound. Over the past 1.5 days, the crews have identified significant areas of Sheens and Smith Island, Snug Harbor, Sleepy Bay, Point Helen, Northwest Bay, and Perry Island. Northwest Bay has been in pretty good shape, but over the last day and a half, seems to be quite a few Sheens out in those areas. We've been tracking the Sheens, particularly the Sheen up at East Twin Bay at Perry Island, and we've been overflying the Esther Island fishery because of the concerns of fishing game and the commercial fishery interest. We've identified some small areas of Sheens and some stringers in the area. We've been faxing our aerial recon reports to fishing game, commercial fish in Cordova, and also fishing game in Valdez. And we've been supplying maps and detailed daily reports to fishing game there, and they've been using that information in order to evaluate the impacts of oil on the fishery up in that area.
Thank you. U.S. Coast Guard, I'd like to call on Captain Jay Crow, give a report.
The first page of our report details the segments that we have signed off cumulative to date. It's splintered out in miles in progress as well. We have done an audit against our figures against Exxon's in Prince William Sound, and we find that we're tracking pretty close. As Ken alluded to in his report on Gulf of Alaska, we're catching up out there. We've had a special team out to try and do inspections in Larson Bay and throughout that southwestern portion of Kodiak, that they've been struggling with the weather. Our statistics follow on the equipment and men, money, material type things in the next couple, three pages. In our issues section, we're going forward with planning at the request of Exxon to locate and move to Prince William Sound a relief for the USS Ogden. That will enable a Navy presence on through to mid-September. The Navy vessels are felt to be a more seaworthy berthing vessel for operating in those exposed areas in the vicinity of Smith Island particularly. We have been coordinating with some groups that are interested in doing volunteer cleanup work. It does require a considerable amount of careful coordination to stay within the requirements of the National Contingency Plan. In cooperation with ADEC and Alaska Fish and Game, NOAA and the Coast Guard are also flying frequent patrols. Essentially, we have flights going three times a day in support of the Fish and Game's attempt to get the commercial fishery safely opened in the Esther Island, and I can't pronounce the name of the other one, right near that one. And we continue to work on our planning for a transition to winter operations. You can see on page 8 the visitors that are due in the near future. We have a congressional delegation that is here arriving in Cordova tonight, staying through for a few days, including testimony in Cordova. They will be visiting Valdez and going out to some of the cleanup sites on the 9th. On the 10th, the Chief Counsel of the Coast Guard, Admiral Warbach, will be here. And then we pick up some other visitors as detailed on that page. And we've included our cameo graph summary in the remainder of the report. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. Shoreline Committee, Bob Pavia, were you going to give the report?
I was just going to talk about the press.
Bob Pavia with NOAA.
As part of the large-scale test of Corexit 9580 on Smith Island, ADEC and EPA, NOAA, and Exxon agreed on a monitoring program to be used there, and I'll just review quickly what the elements of that monitoring program are. The intent is to look at one reference area and three Corexit-treated areas to get information on efficiency and potential environmental impacts as a result of the Corexit application. And there are several elements in the program, and I'll give you a quick outline. The first one is to look at time of treatment to try and determine if using Corexit on the shoreline reduces the amount of time that washing needs to take place on the shoreline. That's an indicator not just of efficiency, but also the amount of disturbance on the shoreline because of the impact of the washing operation itself. The second one is to look at the amount of oil that's collected inside the containment areas during the washing operations on the reference and the Corexit beaches to see if there's an increase in the amount of oil coming off the Corexit beaches and if that oil can be recovered as part of normal operations. In addition to that, there's a series of aerial overflights and on-ground observations to see how well containment is working, whether or not oil escapes the primary and secondary booms, and whether or not oil continues to bleed off of the Corexit treated shorelines for a longer period of time after washing is done than in the reference areas. The remaining tasks look more at potential environmental impacts. The first one is to look at the depth of oil penetration to see if Corexit affects that, and also to see if there's residuals of Corexit in the oil that remains on the beach after washing. The major element of the program in terms of potential environmental effects looks at potential for oil and sediment transport into the lower intertidal and subtidal areas, and that consists of a series of transects to collect sediments in those areas before and after treatment for the Corexit area and the water wash areas to see if there's any kind of net transport into those zones. And the final element is to do limited water column sampling to tie back the water column levels from this site to the tests that were done at Disk Island, and also to the bioassays that are being conducted based on the Disk Island tests. The chemical analysis are being done here at the mobile laboratories in Valdez. Those are the pieces of the program. I can answer questions that anyone might have.
Thank you, Bob. Dave Kennedy,
NOAA. I just wanted to mention that I've been trying to follow the beach set-aside issue for months, actually, certainly the last few weeks. On many occasions in the last couple of weeks, I think we've come pretty close to losing the set-aside program, and I'd just like to congratulate all parties if, in fact, we're close and can work through the final details. I was very distressed thinking we might lose this opportunity, and I think it's an opportunity that not only Alaska, but all of us in the oil spill response community are going to be able to take advantage of and really use the data in spills over the next decades. And so I'm just incredibly pleased to see that it looks like we may be close. I was very worried that we were not going to be able to solve our differences. So my congratulations to all involved.
Thanks, Dave. Sharon, did you have anything?
No, that was
good. Okay. John Noah with Forest Service walked in with a big smile this afternoon at our 4:30 brief. Would you like to introduce the reason why?
Yeah. Everybody else gets to cycle with somebody, and Jim Calarico from the guy at Forest here in Anchorage is going to do it for a number of years. We're going to leave
town. You might notice I'm smiling too. Even as we speak, Captain Dave Zawadzki should be coming in this evening to relieve me, so I'll probably be cycling out tomorrow. Does anyone else have any reports? Have I missed anyone on reports? Anyone have anything? Going once, twice? Adjourned.
My goodness, well, we have a quick meeting for tonight. Perhaps if you've been listening, you know, the first one went for a little over 2 hours, and last week it was a little bit shorter, but not like this. We've not quite been here an hour. There was a lot of information tonight. As I sat here and listened, I had to remind myself that I am a news person, and I keep fairly close track of this. We're talking about two different chemicals and two different operations. One is the Corexit. Now, that's a chemical cleaner. It's 90% kerosene. It's been de-aromated, which means, I suppose, that they take all the volatiles out. It also has some surfactants in it, which the Exxon people try to describe as something like a food oil. Of course, it's not, and they don't tell us what it is. It's an industrial secret, but it's designed to lift the oil up off the rocks and float it to the surface so it can then be skimmed. Okay, so the Corexit is going on currently at Smith and Little Smith Islands. While they await tests from the lab on chronic effects to local marine life, the Exxon is looking at an August 10th deadline for the agencies to make a decision based on the data that they have at the time of whether they can do that wide scale. Okay, now the other chemical is Inapol. That's for bioremediation. It's what they call an oleophilic or oil-loving substance, and it clings to the oil, and it's sort of like a fertilizer for your lawn. It's got phosphorus and nitrogen in it, and it feeds the bugs that eat the oil. We don't know if it's a miracle cure as yet. It certainly gets more of the toxic oil off at some of these places and cleans them a little bit better, and there are great hopes for it. Like they say, the studies are still continuing. It's only started being applied widespread areas in the past week, so that's something to watch. And having updated you on that, the set-asides they were talking about, I think that came up 2 weeks ago here. They just ran into a block because they couldn't get all the information, and a whole lot of it was based on the fact that the state wanted those areas cleaned up eventually, and Exxon said no, and it just came to a halt. Well, that looks like it's on the go again as well. And I suppose I should get on the go again so that you can get back to some music, and we will move the transmission from KCHU back over to the studio where Tom Korn's standing by. I'm Sue Rapley. Have a pleasant evening.
Last bit of, I had to catch my cue because I started listening to Sue. Honestly, I was listening to her talk, but I thought that was highly informative. And yes, we do have some music at 14 minutes before 8 o'clock here at KCHU.
As I sit staring into this liquid amber, ripples move out to the edge of the glass. Is that really your reflection in there? I just want to jump into the warm depths